best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Bingo! Showtime!
I like sweet meat. It's a juxtaposition in my mouth. I like heat.
It's about fucking time someone else is.
Figure out the connector, whack it off, and just make it.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a Little Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies down at Lincoln Path. For the stream link, go direct to DLNGS.org. And ICChallengeAnalytics.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Wow. This is late.
Welcome to episode 1073 of the Linux Link Tech Show. We're late because we were waiting for you, Joel.
Never wait for me.
We're late because Joe was talking about his Nutella recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave.
Nutella recipe.
And Dave doesn't trust Nutella.
And Dan likes salads.
Actually, yeah, we were talking about nut butters.
Yeah.
Nut butters. That could go the wrong direction real quick.
It did.
It's Dave's fault. Anyway, one of the things that I've been working on this past week at work has been really frustrating. We have a new team coming in. Well, not a new team, but new to us. One of the teams is going to be merged into our team. And the big reason is because our platform, they produce tools for our platform. So it doesn't make sense for them to kind of be like a separate team when they're trying to integrate into our standards and our platform. And to help facilitate that as they come on board next week, we decided that we needed to make sure our documentation and our standards and everything for building an application on our platform is well vetted, up to date, and reflects the directions that we want to go to help them a little faster. And that's essentially, we have a skeleton template for both our applications and our cloud functions that can be exported out through Git Archive to be set up into a new repository. We have the documentation and everything written for the Terraform and all the things that you need to do to, whether it's an application or a function, all the permissions and everything that need to be set up and the networking, how that's all done, that you could just follow these steps after checking out the skeleton and you have a application shell that is from as soon as you commit your branch in the repository is going to build, you know, it builds that application and pushes it out to all the environments. So you end up with a basic skeleton hello world application that you're now ready to begin development on to do whatever it is that you need to do. Anyway, we need to keep that up, and it hadn't been kept up as well as it should. We've made a lot of changes in the past couple of months, and it starts to diverge from a lot of applications because we didn't apply the standard workflow process in the skeleton, because it's not a deployable application, right? So we were more or less like, here's the application. The only thing it's missing are like the workflow processes. You could just pull those workflow scripts in from somewhere else. But then we decided to include them. And the benefit of including them means that we can run Dependabot on there. And like all our other applications, Dependabot will handle keeping the dependencies up to date. And when it comes time that there's a compatibility issue or a breaking change that needs to have some additional work done that's already there and identified for us, we can pull it out. And as a case in point, as I've been working with a bunch of the other applications and Dependabot, one of the testing tools that we use is ESLint. And ESLint is on version 9 and supports the ECMA standard and has changed configurations, and thus requires a node version greater than 18. So 19, 20, whatever, which is where we're at, right? So ESLint is a development dependency, but it's what we use for testing. And I have been migrating over the functions to ESLint 9. And it's required some changes to go from Common JS, which is kind of the old way of doing JavaScript, to the ESM standard, ECMA standard, and which is the direction that they're going. But there's like still a huge compatibility gap in there with some of the libraries. And so while I was able to successfully do that migration for a number of functions, as I was trying to do that migration for one of our applications, it became quickly apparent that while ESLint is ready for all of this, ESLint TypeScript libraries are not, and thus invariably ended up with a conflict because something hasn't been updated to account for the new ESLint changes. Now, all this stuff had gone into beta at the beginning of the year, so that by April was when ESLint officially released the 9 branch, to which the ESLint TypeScript some modules were not compatible with. Well, a lot of it wasn't compatible, but then TypeScript ESLint sometime, I think, back in just like 2 or 3 months ago, released their latest version and was fully compatible with ESLint 9. And then a dependent library on that for TypeScript had not been updated and still hasn't been updated and is causing a problem. So it's been over 6 months that this thing has been in development production, and number of people commenting on their repository that this is broken. And they're like, you know, sometimes it just lags behind by a few months and you just got to deal with it, right? But it's frustrating because the actual project documentation says is fully compatible, like is compatible with version 9. And then there's this error message that you get. And when you go look at the error message, it's basically says, oh, that means that one of the libraries, whatever it is talking about, is not fully compatible yet, and therefore you could try a couple of workarounds, but ideally you shouldn't move to that version. You should still stick with the older version. So like all of this thing is being held up by this one library, and when I try to apply to workarounds, oddly enough, it seems to get past that to where I have found a whole bunch of other things that need to be fixed, fix all those things, and then I come back to the original error that was incompatibility keeps coming back up. So it became a very frustrating thing over 3 days trying to implement this, and it's not working, so I take it all back, and then I read that, oh, wait, it's supposed to, but if you try it this way, it might work, and implement it, and it doesn't work. So that is very, very frustrating. And you know what I mean, Dave?
Oh, yeah.
As shit. And I don't like it. But I get to be doing infrastructure work and updating the documentation and building all this stuff out. That's still fun. That is fun. So I just left it at the older version for the applications, and I ran in, you know, and I had to do the update on the skeleton, and Dingus couldn't remember what functions were the ones that he updated. So the first one he found that looked like it was updated, I'm like, oh shit, I got to change this all over. And instead of, and so I had the application shell was in ECMA standard, in EMS format, and I was looking at a function that was still in Common JS, but it had been updated, and I reverted all the stuff to make the function out of shell common JS and work with ESLint 9, figured out the way to do that. And then the guy who I had review my PR is like, I don't know if I agree with this. We should be, you know, going the other direction. And I'm like, well, this is what I had to do to get ESLint working. And he's like, well, if you really think that's the way to go. And then I'm like, oh, shit. And he's like, I'm like, what's the difference between common? Like, did I screw this up? Sure enough, I went backwards. So I had to revert all that stuff. And lovely world. Lovely. It was fun. It was fun learning experience. Learning experience, Joel. We had to do one of those data, or the secure, like the year annual or every 6 months, it seems like, you have to do the security training. Yeah, yeah. Do you guys have to do that at company? So one of the questions was on there, and they're talking about passwords and safety. And, you know, you always hear them say, don't write your password down. Don't write your password down. You shouldn't write your password down because people put passwords on a sticky note and all that stuff. And so then one of the questions on the review was like, it's okay to write your password down on a notepad or a piece of paper and, you know, lock it in a secure location. And I was like, no, it's not okay to write down a password. And they dinged me for that. And they say, no, that's okay. And I'm like, really? I mean.
Whoa.
Yeah. Hmm. I wouldn't agree with that because we've been told repeatedly not to do it.
It's the lowest common denominator.
Right. My,
those tests are designed for normies.
What my favorite on that though is when they have one of those tests and they'll say things like they'll send out an email say don't click on links. But let me ask you this: you ever got an email from your health insurance or some benefit, and what is in it? A link. 90% of the time. Yeah, or like today I got this
meeting
one
notifications.
That, yeah, or today I got one that looked strange, but if you hovered over it and if you actually clicked the link, which I did, it was a legit email, and I'm like, this looks weird. Why was this sent out like this? You know, and I wasn't the only one to raise that too. It's like, you know, but you know, it's something we all have to deal with.
Yeah, I think there's one guy that's, you know, working on this stuff that's just like every 6 months he's like, I'm gonna hit him with a new word. I'm gonna hit him with a new word. Cause like every time I take one of these tests, it's like there's just a new word. Like, this is the first time I ever, like, do you know what vishing is? V-I-S-H-I-N-G.
Yeah.
Like, this is the first time I recall ever seeing vishing. And I'm like,
voicemail.
Isn't that just social engineering? But vishing, it's good, I guess. But yeah, like fishing, spear phishing, vishing, and I guess tishing, is that with text? Is that what it's called now? I don't know.
Smishing.
They got a legitimate smishing for the millennials.
Smishing, it's SMS phishing.
Smishing.
Yeah, smishing.
Oh, okay, yeah, smishing.
Yep. Well, you know, and that's where they're shooting. The 9 times out of 10, they bought this test from somebody. It's some content they bought, so they didn't come up with it. It was bought.
Oh, yeah.
Probably usually by the whoever the security person is.
And that's the company that has that guy in the basement that's coming up.
Yeah, he's like, we're going to hit him with this time.
My company sends
like
out
from Office Space.
Yeah, they set this place on fire. Now, my company also sends out fake phishing emails, and you're supposed to identify.
Oh, yeah.
They're actually getting really good now too.
Well, have you been busted?
It's based on recommendations by Kevin Mitnick. Before he passed, of course.
Right.
Yeah, actually, one of our trainings had him in it. Like, yeah, he conducted the course. Yeah, he's like, I'm Kevin Mitnick. I'm like,
basically
right.
Created corporate security at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know, bravo to him that he actually got to do something.
Broke down worse than he died.
Yeah, he got to do what he loved to do. Close to it, I guess.
You know what I released last week? Ubuntu.
Oh, snap.
I didn't even think about that.
That's still a thing?
Yeah, it is.
Did you try Arch?
Actually, I did something I've never done before, and that's a...
Install Windows?
No.
Change distributions?
Ah, see, we caught you. No. You did that plenty of times.
Updated my Raspberry Pi using the standard way of updating Ubuntu.
And which it worked. Is...
What, just an upgrade?
It's not the
just
command.
Just the update manager.
Do release upgrade, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, it's via the update manager. All you had to do was you had to activate the new version in the I think it's Synaptic is what it was, and then you refresh the tables, and then it says, "Hey, yeah, correct, yeah, it's the same thing, but all graphical way of doing it." But yeah,
you're running a graphical interface on a Raspberry Pi.
I've got a screen attached to it.
On a Pi 5 or a Pi 4?
Yeah, Pi 5. Pi 5. It's like one of my personal desktop that's sitting right next to my work laptop.
How's it working as a personal desktop?
Works really well.
Well, that's great.
I heard the Pi 5 was like almost there to be able to be a full-on desktop.
For what I do, it's fine. Now, if I wanted to do more, like, for example, if I wanted to do video editing, it'd probably be Sketch for that.
Yeah.
But, because I have the 8-gig version, too.
Can it do proper streaming?
I haven't tried that
streaming?
Yet. Oh, video streaming? Yeah, yeah. I think so.
Like, can you watch something from YouTube?
Yeah.
And not have it be an issue like it was with most of the older ones?
Yeah, I think so. I'll have to try it. Yeah, I don't typically use it for that, but I use it more for email or I wanted to order something today. I got email from a company I've ordered from before, and they said, "Hey, we have these things on closeout," and I'm like, "Oh, cool! Let me save some money and order it," you know. And I used it to order, and it worked just fine for that. I mean. But I don't, you know, I don't honestly use it for streaming on it, you know, because I got one of those. It's like a tablet stand, and I got it stuck in the kind I have. Basically, has like an arm that sticks out from it, so I stuck the stand part of it behind my desk, and that's where I'll throw my iPad in there. I don't really have to have the iPad up here to watch stuff because I can always watch stuff on my TV. But when I'm working, I find the bigger screen TV is more of a distraction. If I have something like a YouTube video on or something just in the background, I just use my iPad for that. And if Android tablets wouldn't suck so much, it would be an Android tablet. Yet to find one that I really, really like. Although I did notice one. I have to look. It was on Linus Tech Tips where they had it. I'm trying to remember which one it was.
Well, Samsung usually makes about the top end of Android tablets.
Yeah, this one was different.
You can get a much lower cost Windows tablet with like a full-on desktop processor.
Right.
And then just put Linux on the thing, and then, you know, not suck.
Right.
Hey, I have a question, and not before we get too far away from the other topic. And I apologize, Dave. I'm not discriminating against you because you're retired.
Okay. Let's hear what you got.
I know this won't apply to you, old man. But I'm curious. I'm assuming that both of you, your companies use Microsoft.
Of course.
What's your Exchange server, Microsoft, whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry. Does anybody use Exchange server anymore? Aren't they everything like
yeah.
in the cloud?
Well, actually worth Microsoft 365.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming that's still Exchange. They're running Exchange for that, right?
In the cloud, probably.
Right, yeah. Well, Microsoft, whatever they're doing, I don't think it's a send mail operation over there or PostFix.
No.
Right? I'm assuming
could
that.
It could be. It really could be. Because
they're out
because
there doing
Linux,
that
Linux,
with Spam Assassin and everything.
Azure
whatever.
Has more Linux hosts than it has Windows hosts, believe it or not.
Well, be that as it may, I have found that my companies, I don't know what they're using, but I very rarely get scam or junk email or anything like that that I notice. I don't know if it just gets filtered into my trash bin or whatever. So I'm curious, when they send out the phishing or whatever it is, those test phishing emails, aren't they like, do they stand out? Because like, do you guys get a lot of those emails that you would stand out?
No, I still get some that I think are phishing emails, and then it's not that they're valid, it's that they are, you know, kind of spam emails, and I really shouldn't be getting those on my work email. I don't know how that freaking happens, but it still happens. So I've incorrectly sent some to the people that check those.
It's like I see people all the time complaining about political texts. I hardly get any of those either.
Oh, has everybody done early voting yet?
No, I'm thinking about doing it this weekend.
I've tried to go, but it's been closed every time I go.
Yeah, they have our 5 hours this weekend. Yeah.
Well, I want to go, like, my wife wants to go with me, and we can only go on the weekend because she doesn't get home until after 5 o'clock. And so, like, we went to go on the one weekend, and it wasn't open. And then the weekend it was open, I had to spend down in Dave's neck of the woods.
Driving on those high-quality roads.
Yeah, destroying my tires.
So, the suspension. The tablet, and I have to see what OS
this weekend,
runs.
Joe. Sorry.
But the tablet I was thinking about was Red Magic's Nova gaming tablet. That's when, you know, it runs a Snapdragon Snapdragon 8 Gen 3.
Yeah, Red Magic makes some good stuff. I know they make decent phones.
Yeah, my thing with this is it's
$5.99. At least stats-wise.
Right. So and it has a fan in it. I'm not exactly sure how I feel about that.
There's a bunch of tablets that came with fans. The the Latitude, some of those.
What version of Android is it? What do they promise? You know, and it's actually up for pre-order. What are they promising to support to? Because I don't want to buy another Android tablet and have it be like our beloved Jive was.
Well, how many times are you gonna get burned, man? How many times are you gonna go?
Well,
that's
the key there.
Look,
yeah.
Look, you can even buy a one of these Windows tablets,
right?
Preferably something a little bit newer with either an I series or an M series. They both work pretty well, and then put Android x86 on there if you desperately want an Android tablet. That is never going to be out of support because you're going to be the support.
Yeah, but here's the other question on that is Google Play Store support. And will your applications that you want to use on it, will they be supported? That's the key.
They're as supported as you make them. Look, you can sideload Google Play Store. You can make that go on there on Android x86. And then after that, you're good to go. Google services are now running.
Yeah.
And as long as you keep it updated to the most recent version, you should be able to run whatever you want to.
Okay, this Red Magic tablet runs Red Magic OS 9.5, whatever that is.
No clue. Probably, it's probably Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yeah. Let me see here.
Android 4. What was that, 4.4 or something? 4.1?
That's really incredibly old and insecure by now.
Oh, yeah.
But what do y'all think about the color Kindle they released?
No, we talked about that last week, Dave.
Oh, okay.
We
did. I wasn't here.
And I kind of want one.
It looks awesome.
I would use one.
Yeah, definitely kind of want one, but. So.
Do they have large enough print for you, Dave?
With my glasses, I can see 8.5 just fine, Dan.
There you go. That does look nice, although it's kind of expensive. But it might be worth it.
But there is currently a tiff between ARM and Qualcomm. Did you guys hear about that?
No, what are they tiffing about?
ARM is pulling their license from Qualcomm.
Well,
Okay, can you continue the story there?
That's going to affect mobile.
Let me
devices.
Pull it up. It says ARM cancels Qualcomm's architecture license, endangering its chip business. It says any company that makes ARM chips must license the technology from ARM Holdings PLC, which is a British company that develops the instruction set. Companies can license the instruction set and create their own CPU designs or license one of the ARMs, blah, 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 the Cortex C CPU core designs. Bloomberg reports that ARM is canceling Qualcomm's license, an escalation of a fight that began in late 2022 when ARM sued Qualcomm over its acquisition of Nuvia in 2021. ARM has given Qualcomm 60 days notice of the cancellation, giving the companies 2 months to come to some sort of agreement before Qualcomm is forced to stop manufacturing and selling its ARM chips. So, this could be a really big deal because the Snapdragon's used by Samsung and a lot of other companies.
Is the M1 an ARM chip?
It is, but of course it's not made by Qualcomm.
Oh.
And that's with ARM's agreement with Apple.
So they just want Qualcomm wants a cut of the ARM chip money?
Well, no. ARM wants a cut of Qualcomm's money.
They're saying there's IP there, right? I mean, is that what they're saying?
Yeah. Well, they licensed their IP out. Wasn't ARM owned by Digital at one point, Digital Computers? I thought they were. I'm not sure.
Oh, they were what?
I thought they were owned by Digital, the Digital Corporation that's no longer in business. Probably wrong on that. But.
I'm looking. Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, so. See here. So Red Magic OS 5, to go back to Red Magic for a minute because I was looking that up, version 5 was based on Android 12, version 8 was based on Android 13. So I'm assuming version 9, 9's based on Android 14. So it's Android 14, essentially. So it's fairly up to date. And Red Magic is producing the OS.
Do you trust them to do updates in the future?
About as far as I trust Jide with updates to the Jide tablet and the Remix OS.
Any Chinese tablet manufacturer.
Yeah. Or like, was it Realme or Xiaomi? Somebody, they brought out a trifold phone.
Why?
Yeah, it folds out twice.
Huawei made the trifold.
Thank you, Huawei.
I think it was Huawei.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, it's a cool idea.
It's really damn thin, and you're not going to be able to buy it here in the States. Because Huawei is the devil, according to the federal government.
Oh, you can still buy it and have it shipped.
But it's not going to ship with the Play Store on it. You'll have to sideload it. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't.
Yeah. It's a cool looking phone, and it's a cool idea, and I'm sure other companies will pick up that idea eventually. It's just, you know, mostly you haven't seen a company like really perfect that folding screen tech. I mean,
not yet.
OnePlus is kind of close, I think, but Samsung still has that line in the middle, and when Samsung can't get it right.
Well, or neither can OnePlus either.
Yeah, they're not perfect, that's for sure. But they had a thinner screen and with much less of a pronounced fold.
Mm-hmm.
Crease for the fold.
Is rollable screens next? I mean,
you've already seen them at CES a couple of times.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that'll actually take off or anything, but they might do like one that you can curve to like fit around your arm or something.
Yeah.
Yep. So
go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say I did something cool last weekend. I broke
made
my
your own nut butter.
No, I broke my hiking distance record that I made on the march by a few miles. I did a 14-mile hike.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
I did that on my vacation after.
How long did it take you?
About 4.5 hours.
Not bad.
No. It wasn't as challenging as the 12.68 miles I did. Because it was basically flat as hell, and it was also paved, so for probably 90% of it. Part of it went through, there's a metro park here called Big Darby, or Battelle Darby.
Averaging 3.5?
Right about there, between 3.1 to 3.5, 3.5, yeah. I only stopped long enough to, take my pack off and like grab an energy drink or a protein bar or a water bottle.
How's your feet?
Good. Since it was paved, I ended up wearing my road shoes instead of my trail runners. So my road shoes are Olympus Vias, Ultra Olympus Vias, and that just kind of confirms that when my next pair of trail shoes, which I'll have to buy before the Mammoth March next year, will be the Olympus version.
Do you go for heavy ankle support when you get your trail shoes?
Not really.
Okay.
No. It's one of the most popular shoes for through hikers, like on the Appalachian Trail. First off, trail runners are what everyone wears now. All right. No, almost nobody wears a boot.
I got a messed up ankle, so
yeah, I could see why you'd wonder. Yeah, the nice thing is Ultra does make a boot.
Yeah.
So if you want something that with that ankle support, you could go with that. But the Ultra Lone Peak line is one of the most popular ones for through hikers. And I discovered that's fine, and I think it might be okay over time. So it might be, there might be a time where I can switch back to that. But what I found on the Mammoth March was rocks and roots. I felt almost every one of them through the Lone Peaks, and those are zero drop shoes, and they have a fairly low stack on them too. So,
the thicker sole in your future.
Yeah. So the Olympus Vias, which are the road version, they do make a trail version of that shoe, which has the same stack. So I'm either going to go with that, or I may look into Topo makes some that have like a plate in the sole, so that'll help you from feeling the rocks and the tree roots and stuff as much.
My trail shoes are the Ultra Olympus, and
yeah,
really thick soles, and they don't feel roots or rocks. I love them, but I've not had them but 3 months, and I had to glue the tread back on them. I've never had to do that with a shoe. So,
and interesting.
I've got a 5K Saturday, but I've not run or walked in 2 weeks. So I mean, we went hiking in Georgia last week, and we went to Tallulah Gorge, which is the Valencia family that did all the tightrope walking years ago.
Okay.
They tightroped across that thing in the 20s. It's like a
the Graysons.
Yeah, I think. No, not the Graysons.
Yep.
Anyway, it's this huge. I mean, there's like 1,200 steps down to the bottom and 1,200 back up. And
wow.
That was brutal on your knees.
Sure is. Yeah, those Olympus Trail shoes have Vibram soles.
Yeah, that's the shoe I have. And it's a great shoe, but like I said, I've had to glue the tread back on in two places.
Maybe
it seems like a note.
I know.
Well, it could just be how you wear the shoe, too. So, I mean,
it would not be the shoe for me.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know that, I don't know. This is my first pair of trail running shoes. So I don't know if I'd get these again, but they're comfortable, and we'll see how they do now that I've glued them.
Hoka. I'm surprised you didn't go for the Hoka trail running shoes.
Well, I went with these just because Woot had a sale. Yeah, that's the reason I went.
Well,
I run in Hokas. I mean, that's what I was using. But it's a road shoe, not a trail shoe.
Right.
Not a lot of traction.
The Vias, which is the road shoe, that I don't have that problem. I've had them for a little bit, but I got mine at Sierra Trading Post for like $79 versus the $170 they normally are.
Yeah.
So I mean, that. Basically, for those any kind of shoes, I will say this, is find the one you like. You know, like if you have to go to like a place like REI or something. Actually, REI is a great place to buy shoes because you have up to a year to return them, believe it or not. So you can take them on an event or do something, and then you can return them, and they'll refund your money. I don't know if that holds.
That seems a little jank.
Well, I don't know if that completely holds for all the shoes, you know, or for shoes for that matter, because I know a lot of gear like that, you know, because like things like jackets and stuff, you can definitely do that with, and definitely with packs. So I'm not 100% sure on the shoe part, but I did get a puffy.
Wait, hold on.
Go ahead.
When they say they'll accept the shoe back after a year, is that after a year of wearing the shoe?
Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh. Anything, as far as I know. Now, granted,
I rarely have a shoe that'll last more than a year, because I will just
walk them to pieces. Yeah.
But
I
mean,
definitely don't either.
So when your shoe gets worn out, you could just send it back to them, and they'll give you a refund?
Send you a new one?
You take it in the store.
And then what?
You bring it in, and the sole's falling off, and it's all floppy and shit. And they're just like, here, have another pair.
So let me see here. Let me double check this.
There's two. While he's double checking, there's two running stores in South Carolina. They're probably a national chain. I know Fleet Feet and Gotta Run, and they have a return policy.
Right.
It's pretty generous, and I've only used it once. I ran in a pair of Ultra Zero Drop running road shoes for a week. Probably put 50 miles on them. I don't know. And they weren't working. I took them back, and no questions asked, they took them back.
Well, that's a different story. Yeah, you know, that you had an issue with them.
Yeah.
My problem is you know, you buy a pair of shoes, you like them, they work great. You take them out, you wear them on a trail, and you're like, I didn't want to spend that much money on a shoe. These things are great, but I've got all my use out of them.
So here's the deal on that. It is $365, but if they are excessively worn or if you don't clean them before you go to return them, they won't accept them back. So if you take if I bought my first pair of Lone Peak 7s, which are well worn, and if I bought them at REI and tried to bring them back, they wouldn't accept it.
So excessively worn probably means 25%, you know. So if you get 400 miles out of a shoe, if you got 100 miles on it, they probably won't take it back. Big Mac is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd have been like, if you got 50 miles out of the shoe, it shouldn't go back, Dave.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
how soon into that 50 miles did you know they weren't working out for you?
Yeah.
He gave him some time. He's like, let me break him in a little bit,
okay.
see how it goes. And, right. and it just still didn't work. I can see that. But, right. you know.
It might not be 50 miles. It was probably 5K times. So it's probably 30 miles.
And that's all eligible items. It says that includes e-bikes. Now, something that isn't included in that is outdoor electronics. So, like watches, like Garmin watches and GPSs and stuff like that. Or if you buy online resupply used gear items, so that's one thing you get as a co-op member. And, oh, by the way, these are co-op members. You have to belong to the co-op, okay, which I do, okay. If you're a non-member, you get 90 days.
Well,
okay.
If you're paying into service, then that's a whole different thing. I mean,
right.
If you're willing to pay enough for a service and they're willing to keep you in shoes as long as you're paying, then that's a different story.
Yeah, it's like insurance.
But it's well worth paying for the co-op because they do give you, like you get bonus points and stuff, you know, like when you buy stuff. And, you know, so it's kind of like, you know, like a frequent shopper program as well. But you can also
if Dave is putting that much mileage on his shoe leather, then I could see him paying for a service to send him a new pair of shoes every 6 months.
I'm a cheap bastard. That's what I am. I mean, well, I've been in REI one time and they were selling this was 15 years ago.
They are selling
T-shirts for $60. It's like, nah, this ain't my store.
Right.
Nope.
I'm surprised your wife didn't just tell you to cut the damn tires up you have laying around in the back
right.
and wear those things as hirachis and get your ass out so, running.
Dave, even if you're being a cheap bastard when it comes to your shoes, if you're still putting that much mileage on them, in the end, if you're having to buy shoes every 6-8 months,
right?
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
it might.
So
if there were a service, then that might still be cheaper in the long run
right.
and better for
yeah,
your feet.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's the other benefits you get from being a member of the co-op is, when you sign in as a member, you can look on both online and in a store and buy used gear items. So like, and the nice thing is, at least when you're looking at it in the stores, you can say, oh wait. That's a little worn too much. I don't care. So, oh, this looked brand new. And you get them for a significant discount.
So one thing I want to try in my lifetime just to see how it is to have properly, like, custom-fitted shoes. Shoes that actually fit. Because, Joel, you might have the same issue. But my feet are wide.
Not as much as it used to be.
Yeah. Well, my feet have always been wide. I can never find a properly sized shoe that fits both the width and the length. So I would love to just once.
You see, I used to always wear New Balance wide, okay, for my sneaks, right? But I had a pair of those that I bought March this year. And I wore them... I forget where I wore. I think maybe I wore them to Hershey Park or something, and I got blisters with them.
Go ahead.
So I think what was happening is with my weight loss, my feet got less wide, and now I'm wearing regular Wiz shoes.
Yeah. No, what I've
but
taken
I
to
do
doing
feel for you though.
What I've taken to doing is buying larger shoes, and then just putting thick insoles in them. That way, the width
too,
is
right?
correct and the height is correct. Granted, yep. the length it'll depend, but I can get it pretty close with a proper pair of insoles.
Right. But.
And so, the last time I wore New Balance, I think, was 1999, back when they were affordable.
Yeah, they still are. I can get New Balance for 50 or less, depending on where I go.
Really?
Yep.
I miss being near a Skechers outlet. And I don't think Skechers is as good as they used to be.
Right.
But Skechers is the only company that I've purchased shoes from where I was wearing those shoes 2-3 years later.
Now,
I mean, they're steel toe, non-slips.
Right.
I wore those every night working at 7-Eleven for a couple of years. And, yeah, I spent 8 hours at a time on my feet, and those things were great.
Yeah.
Doc Martens are the best shoes I've ever worn.
The local Meijer, which is one of those superstores, kind of like a Super Walmart, they carry New Balance, and they're never that expensive.
I got some Tony Lomas that I absolutely love, but it's just too hot most of the time to wear them.
Yeah, and those are nice wet dress shoes, right?
The Tony Lomas, no, they're actually dress work boots.
Ah.
So they're work boot style, but the leather is nice enough that you can actually, like, wear them for dressy things.
I want to get a pair of Chukkas for that kind of stuff eventually. But
well, we have talked about food. We have talked about shoes.
Everywhere, man.
I can talk about Linux for 10 or 15 minutes here if you want me to.
Ooh,
oh, do it.
Yeah. This is one of the things I love about Linux. My grandson picked up. He was digging around in something he shouldn't have been digging around, but he brought something to me, and it was my old PS3i camera. And I thought, well, I've not seen that in years, so I'm going to do something with it. So I used the program Motion, which is a 24-year-old program. And
it's a good program.
Yeah, I hooked it up. I played with it years ago, but I hooked it up, and I've got it pointed at the front porch, and it's recording video. And I thought that's cool. But, you know, I didn't want to view that on one of my 300 tabs in Firefox. I wanted a lightweight browser so I could just have that window open all the time. So I started using, for the purpose of this video, the Surf browser, which I think is part of the Suckless Tools. It's a it's not a kiosk mode, but it's a 24-year-old program too, I think. No, it's only 16 years old. But it's just a super minimal. I think it uses less than 44 megabyte of RAM, but it's just a.
Damn.
If you look at the window, you know, it's floating in my Tile and Window Manager. It's just a video window. That's by design. The Surf browser has no user interface. It's just the web page, and I've sized it to just that size, and that's cool. I thought, you know, I did that in a day or two, and that got me interested in more lightweight browsers, and one of the programs I've been using for a long time but don't use it that often is a 21-year-old program called SurfRAW that Julian Assange wrote. That's more or less a command line interface for a web browser. So if you want to search for something, you use what he called ELVI, which is plural for Elvis, which are just little bash scripts that are made to search individual different search engines. So there's one for DuckDuckGo, there's one for Google. I wrote one for my local instance of the Circ MG meta search engine that I have running in a Docker install. But so I can, you know, with a Rofi shortcut, I can hit Alt F3 and just start typing, you know, Circ MG and then what I want to see, and boom, it pops up in the Surf web browser just the results I wanted to see, separate from my Firefox conglomerate mess. And the other program that I got to using, for years now, I've run the i3 lock program on my i3 desktop for a screen locker. And I've run X Screensaver on some of these computers back here, but I put X Screensaver on there, which is another 24-year-old program. And I think Surfrawl is 21 years old. And all my photos, you know, that I've downloaded from Google, and I've got backed up on three different computers back here, I mounted that with SSH FS because X Screensaver only does local. You can only do local slideshows. So I mounted it remote, you know, with SSH FS, and got that working. So I just had a lot of fun with four different very old programs. And that's one of the things I love about Linux. They still got all these old programs that serve a purpose and do it well.
Yep.
I love SSH FS.
Now, oh, yeah. SSH FS. I don't know how old it is, but that's awesome. Yep. I got a music, you know, all my music is mounted that way. But now, I don't know why I didn't think of it earlier. My photos are now, too. So.
Right. Now, I tried something interesting with Linux this week, too. I've got this PowerBook G4 12-inch machine, which is obsolete from the terms of Apple, you know, from, you know, it's a PowerPC machine, right?
Early 2000s?
Yes, somewhere around there, before 2003. Well, Yellow Dog doesn't exist anymore.
I know. But,
Adelie Linux exists, and that's a fairly modern version of it. Okay. And I booted it. It booted fine, but I was having trouble getting it to install correctly. And I think that's because the boot partition has to be an HFS plus partition, which is the disk partitioning scheme that Apple uses for Mac OS and OS X before that. So the installer just wasn't working for me. I might try, there's another one called Phoenix. That one works a little bit better on the G5, which is a 264-bit processor. G4 is a 32-bit processor, also single core. Eventually I want to see if I can't get it running, because the one problem with the highest OS this supports is Leopard on OS X, and you cannot load a modern browser on it. Otherwise, it's fine. You know, I mean, it's usable. It can connect to my home Wi-Fi network. Granted, it's only connecting on the 2 gig network, not a 5 gig. But and it's always been my favorite Mac that I've ever had, because I had one when it was brand new, when Mac OS Tiger was out. I think Dan also had the same one too, if I remember right.
Same one,
I think. Same PowerBook G4.
Oh, you mean the one with the fancy bar at the top, or whatever the hell that's called?
No. The 12-inch one from back in 2003-ish.
Oh, I bought one of those. Yeah. I think I still had that laying around somewhere.
I love that machine. It's a perfect size. It's just a little bit bigger than a netbook. But a little thicker, too, than any MacBook today. So, but I'll probably stick with the Mac OS for my work OS. It's a lot better and a lot more stable than Windows is, for sure.
Do you guys run Chrome?
Nope.
I do.
Have you been hit with that update that kind of bricks uBlock Origin?
Chrome OS?
No. Chrome browser.
Oh, yeah, I've run Chrome for work. I didn't know.
Do you run uBlock?
I do.
Well, no, I've heard people complaining about it, that the update was rolling out and it's affected some people. I was asking because I haven't seen it yet. My uBlock's still working fine.
I think I use uBlock, but I haven't noticed a problem.
You think this is some kind of retaliatory thing they're doing for YouTube revenue or something?
Yeah, sort of. They're limiting the number.
What's the highest release now, though?
Yeah. Of what, uBlock or Chrome?
Chrome.
Not sure.
I'm looking at stable channel right now. It's 129.668.70.71.
I'm at 128.06613.119.
Okay, I've got the latest one. I've got the latest one. 70 and 71 is Windows or Mac, but 70 on Linux, and it's working fine. That's the one that came out September 24th. So, and uBlock Origin is running.
Okay, well, maybe it just hasn't rolled out to Linux yet.
Could be.
But after it does hit and uBlock gets bricked, I'm going to have to seriously consider switching back to Firefox.
I still love me some Firefox, yeah. But I think...
I still use it for specific applications, but that's it.
Yeah. I think my mom used to call me all or nothing David. I think I've reached the point of diminishing returns with Firefox because of the way I use it with all of those. I got some new extension that puts tabs to sleep. That way I'm not using half my RAM.
Well, they got it built in now.
Yeah, but I mean, I still love Firefox, but I'm still going to use it for, you know, things I have to use it for. But there's something really cool about Surf for All and Surf. I mean, just being it from the shell, being able to type a search and have it just one window pop up of what you need, that's pretty cool. I think I'm going to be doing more of that in the future.
Do you use OneTab?
No, I used to. What was it I use now?
All the tabs?
Auto Tab Discard is the extension I'm using now. And it's doing a good job. I mean, you can. What I like about it is you can say, you know, this domain or this tab, don't discard the cache, and you know, don't wipe the memory from this tab for this session or permanently. So I've got, you know, 10 tabs that never go to sleep, but the rest of them, they wake up as soon as I click on the tab.
Well, I just did a PMAC build Google Chrome just to see if there was any updates, and I'm the latest, most up to date. So I canceled the transaction because I don't want to reinstall because it's working fine. I have to say, one of my favorite things about Manjaro or Arch in general, well, Manjaro for sure, I love its terminal because it I forget what it does with the I'm using console because I'm using KDE.
URXVT Unicode.
No, you use like, you don't even use a window manager 90% of the time, so.
No, not on my daily driver. On these computers back here, I've got Plasma running.
Dave's like, if it ain't a text app, I don't want it.
I think I use
You use a browser. That's about it.
I think Joplin is a GUI. There's a... There's a 2E version of it, but I installed it, but because I installed the GUI as an app image, the two don't talk to each other, so I need to like uninstall the app image and install the true program that's in a proper place for the 2E to talk to it, so I need to do that.
Yep.
Why don't you fix the app image?
I don't know. I guess I could. I don't know. I've not thought
about it. We build a new one, right?
It's not that big a deal. I mainly use the there's only like a couple of to-do lists on there that I use, but the main feature I use with Joplin, the one I use the most every day is the Joplin Web Clipper extension. It works a lot like the old Google Notebook where you can just highlight something and add it to a notebook.
Uh-huh.
That was cool. But I looked at a lot of lightweight browsers in the last couple of days, and there's one called Next, NYXT. It's the hack. It reminds you, I don't know if you know anything about the Qt browser. It's really keyboard centric. Mm-hmm. The Next is like that. But they call it the hacker's browser. I played with it a little bit. It's not something I would use, but it's cool. It's got like the Fuzzy Finder built into it, and like a console, so you can. That's that way you find your tabs, the way you find text, and you know it's got some neat features.
Mm-hmm. What's it built off of? Does it say? You said Qt?
No. It reminds me of Qt in the fact that everything is all the links are navigatable by the keyboard. You press like a shortcut key, and all these shortcuts pop up on the screen. So you don't have to use a mouse at all. But what Next browser is based on is I'm not sure. Let's see.
So when, like, I'm looking at the website. Did you try it? Did you say you tried it?
Yeah. Just for 15 minutes.
When I look at it, I see their example is you'd start typing something in, and then I just see a bunch of little things pop up, like AYF.
That's Fuzzy Finder. Yeah.
And so, what is that actually doing? Is that just looking for all those?
I didn't get into the features. I was, my use case was I wanted a browser that had like where I could disable, or it wasn't even included, no user interface, just a window with the web page is what I was looking for. And does that.
Are those all links? So if you would type in like those three letters, it would hit that link. Is that what it does?
Yeah. That's how the Qt browser works. You hit like a shortcut trick and Control F or something, and then all these shortcuts pop up, and you can navigate just with the keyboard based on the shortcuts that are assigned to the links.
So it's just like using Vim.
Yeah.
VI improved.
It's a lot like that.
I can see myself getting into that.
Yeah, I mean it's a little bit of an investment, but I mean there's no tabs, there's buffers, and you can search buffers, with a Fuzzy Finder kind of search. So it's like Emacs and Vim together, sort of. They took a little bit of both of them.
It looks pretty neat. I would like to use it, but then I would probably have like compatibility issues or something with it.
Yeah. You wouldn't use this for work.
You use it for Pornhub, right?
But it's like the surf browser. I mean, if you just wanted to look something up real quick, the fastest way possible, that you can't beat that. But, it's not going to be compatible with, your bank maybe, or something, or with all websites. But NetSurf and Surf and this Next browser, they're pretty good. I mean, I looked at, remember Dilo or Dillo? It's pretty limited in what it can do. There's a Dillo Plus, but it's not in the AUR. But I even use text-based browsers some. I mean, I use Newsboat. I use TUIR, which is a Reddit client. This is a 2E, and I can open a web page in a text-based browser or any of these lightweight ones really fast without having to I think I'm going to slowly stop using Firefox.
Too heavy for Dave.
No, it's too easy to have 300 tabs open. I need to change the way I'm using the way of.
Or maybe you just need a new computer.
No, my computer's fine. I mean, I've got plenty of RAM. It's not hurt. My computer's not hurting. It's not new, but it's doing a fine job. It's a Lenovo ThinkPad T590 or something with 32 gig of RAM, and it's doing its job. No complaints.
Well, that's cool. I don't know if I should try that. How long did it take you to install Next?
Not long at all, I remember.
Does it require a lot of additional packages?
I can't remember, Dan. I don't think it did.
Wonder if it's available.
I can.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, and dependencies. No, there's nothing really big in there. It's WebKit GTK, WebKit 2 GTK based.
I just found an article that talks about the best distros for PowerPC.
What distro is that?
Yeah, hardly any of them. Most of them, like Ubuntu and Lubuntu, they stopped support back in 2016. Oh, and yeah, Fedora's 12, like Fedora 17.
Next is in the regular Arch repos, by the way, Dan.
Yeah.
I'm running it right now.
Now, see, what I wish is that some of the other alternative ones that I've tried on Mac OS and Windows are available on Linux, specifically the Arc browser. I really like that. I've used it, but I don't. It's not my primary.
Yeah. I was tempted to go with that Zen browser over Firefox, but yeah, I can open up Rofi and just type in surf and then a website, and it opens. Or I can use Surfrawl and just type in
Arc.
SR and then what I want to search for.
Yeah, I think Arc. I'm trying to remember if Arc is based on WebKit. I think it is.
Zen's based on Firefox.
Mm-hmm. But the thing I like about it is that they're trying to change the paradigm of browsing. So it's got a lot of interesting features that help you. If you're a tab fiend like Dave and I are.
Yeah. And that's what Zen does the same thing. It just doesn't go as far as Arc.
Right. Right. And unfortunately, Arc is not open source.
Yeah. What I like about the main thing that intrigued me about Zen, you probably remember me talking about this a couple of weeks ago, was you can have, I think, up to 4 web pages in a tab. And you know it's not ugly. It's usable.
Now you can with Chrome, it can help you sort your tabs. So and it'll do it with some sort of intelligence.
Yeah.
So it makes it a little easier dealing with it, but. Only a little.
If you use this browser, Dan, let me know what you think. Like I said, I've used the Qt browser before, which is, it doesn't have this fuzzy finder stuff. It doesn't have as many keyboard-driven features, but it is keyboard-driven. It doesn't go as far as this does, I don't think, though.
Yeah, I got to figure out how to use it before use it, man. I bring it up, it's not very intuitive.
That's like the Surf browser, which doesn't have a lot of features, but there's I think there's no interface to it.
Epiphany is another browser that's weird and old.
Is that the GNOME default still?
No.
default might be the bad word, but that's not the GNOME suite browser.
I think it might be. I don't know.
SeaMonkey's still around, which is it's a web browser, an email client, a news group reader. It's a suite all in one. Remember SeaMonkey though? She's based off Netscape.
Isn't Firefox based off of Netscape?
Yeah. I think SeaMonkey. I don't know if it predated Firefox or.
I don't remember. No, GNOME Web is what Epiphany is what became of Epiphany.
Okay. But the PS3 webcam is an okay webcam. It's not high tech or anything, but it'll show me my front porch.
Been debating getting cameras for outside. I will not have one pointing inside my house.
Well, I've tried this with an old Android phone, but you put one of those in the window, they just get hot.
Yeah. They're not made to have their cameras running all of the time. They will die.
Yep.
relatively quickly.
Yeah.
But if you're running an old phone that you got for nothing and it was just going to sit in a drawer anyway, then burn it up. Right. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. But I'm glad I found it. My grandson found this camera because it serves a purpose now.
Yeah, I mean,
I got video last night. Cheap. Oh, yeah. And I may get a better one. I got a video last night. I mean, I got one on this 3D printer here, but I got video last night of one skunk and two raccoons on my front porch.
Heck, you can even pick up trail cams for cheap.
So. Oh, yeah.
Or Wise makes the cameras, and I believe they even also make solar panels, so you can don't have to wire them in.
Yeah, well, and IP cams. I mean, you can get older IP cams. It's hard to get like modern, just plain IP cams because everybody wants you to use their app.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm sure they're out there. They're just harder to find these days.
That's again what I love about Linux. You got a 24-year-old program called Motion, which has been there's a Motion Plus out now, so they've got a newer version with more features. But I just installed Motion because that's what I knew. But this works.
Now, I'm debating a while ago, like a long time ago. I had this device I got when I was writing for Gear Diary called Tux Droid. Have you ever heard of that, Dave?
Tux Droid?
Sounds familiar. Yep.
What is it?
I'll drop the link here in the mumble chat. So it's basically kind of like a little bit like a like an Alexa or something like that. But it's open source and it looks like Tux, and he has a light up eyes and ears or not ears. His wings.
Originally, this is old.
It is very old, yeah, but you can actually still buy them.
Vintage.
Right, but you can still buy them. So, yeah, there's a dedicated community that actually still.
You can buy us one for Christmas.
Hack the thing. No, I ain't gonna. I don't even know if I'm gonna buy me one for Christmas. No.
Christmas is the season of giving, Joel, not taking. For yourself.
Look. Even I know that I'm going to have to, that if there's something that I want for Christmas, I'm going to have to buy it for me.
Exactly.
I am my own best Santa Claus.
I'm actually debating between the ColorSoft, which is the Kindle one, you know, the Color Kindle, or It ain't going to sound funny, a fanny pack. But a good one. Not a good one.
You know, somehow I feel like there is a price difference range of about $230 in there.
Necessarily.
Like, if you're paying that much money for a fanny pack, that fanny pack better come with a fanny in it.
No, it wouldn't be a cheap one.
Yeah, but I mean,
do you need an expensive one?
If I want it to last on trail, yeah.
What are you doing with your fanny pack, man?
The La Petite Derriere from Tom Benn, which is 100. Yeah, that's the name of it. That's the name of it.
Post a link for that, because I can't see ever spending $150 on a fanny pack. I will make my own for that price.
He can't buy us a $48 euro for Christmas because he's going to spend all his money on his fanny pack.
Yeah, 200 for the price of one fanny pack, man, you could buy us all a Tux Droid, each one of us.
Right.
Let me look at this $150 fanny pack.
$140.
Ah, yeah, get it
okay,
right, Joe.
Okay. Let me give you this Android link here, or not Android, but Amazon link here.
By the way, this thing's actually made in the United States, not in China.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Hey, I bought a pair of Chinese,
which is why it cost
$140 or $60.
Wait, you're telling me it costs $140 because it's made in the United States, and the one that Joel,
yeah, it's made in Seattle.
The one that you're talking about, how much is it?
It's $140.
No, how much is the one you're talking about, Joe?
There's one here for $10. So that's a little bit. No, because the one I'm gonna post is slightly smaller than the one he's talking about, and then I'm gonna post one that is roughly the same size, roughly the same quality, and I think is like $15. So.
Yeah, but you can add a shoulder strap to this one for $34.
Oh. Give me a second.
That's one of them.
How much is that one, Joel?
$140.
No, the one that I posted.
Oh, shit, I don't know.
You should click on it and find out.
It's free. $9.99.
All right, hold on.
Wait. Hold on. Is that the same size?
No, this one's pouch, the same dude. Size. This one's the same. Yes, a belt pouch, much like a fanny pack.
The $140 one is 280 cubic inches, 4.5 liters.
Yeah.
Oh, so this one's huge?
I don't know that that's big or not.
Oh, no.
It's fairly
that
big.
That one is practically a laptop bag.
Yes.
Looking at the different pictures, that's a messenger bag.
And that's actually smaller than some of the other ones I've been looking at.
That's not a fanny pack, bro. That's a messenger bag. And you can get messenger bags much cheaper.
The Talon, the lumbar hiking waist pack. Actually, I can get that cheaper from Osprey, which is $88.
How much cheaper? Because I think you and I have a difference of opinion.
$88 versus
cheaper.
$140.
Okay. Yeah, that's cheaper, but that's still not my price range.
And this one, unlike the Tom Benn one, has water bottle pockets.
You know, I can see Dave buying one of these things and wearing it on his fanny like that, farting it all day long, and then taking off and sniffing it.
You reach an age where you don't care what people think about what you're wearing.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, I'm 5 days a week now. I'm wearing overalls. I mean, today I wore
overalls.
A $34 pair of blue denim.
You wear a t-shirt under it?
This is a long sleeve shirt, t-shirt I had on today.
There you go, Joel. Roughly the same size, $18.
But is it the same quality?
No, that one's probably not. That's the thing.
Here's one that looks to be a fairly similar quality. No, I disagree with that.
Actually, one of the things that annoys me about my hiking, my day pack that I have, is it has hip belt pockets, and what happens is I can open them with the hip belt still clipped around my waist. I just can't get them to zip shut. All right, like, so if I pulled out, like, say I had my backup set of earbuds in there and my primary set gave up the ghost, I'll open it, I can get the new ones out, put the old ones back in, but then I literally have to take off the pack in order to get the stupid hip belt pocket to zip, because what happens is the it kind of,
so you need an extension string.
It's hard to explain, you know, but the only way I can do it is if I hold the zippers like straight while I'm zippering it. One of the things I'm thinking about doing is 3D printing like an insert that I can put in to keep that part of the zipper oriented in the right direction.
While
I have it unzipped, like just like a little, almost like a bone of like a ladies have bones in their bras, you know, something like that, so that I keep it the right shape.
You need an underwire,
so it zips. Because if those hip belt pockets would zip properly, I wouldn't even care about it.
Okay, Joel.
A fanny pack. Now, granted, a fanny pack would be nice to have when I'm doing day hikes. Like, say, if I'm just doing a 2 or 4 mile one, you know, there's that. Or.
It's even got suspenders.
I can use that instead.
I know, right?
Actually,
it's got all these different attachments.
Probably really think about needing to get is a ruck plate carrier, because I did buy a 30-pound ruck plate, and yes, I've been hiking and walking with the 30-pound ruck plate on.
Joel, you need to check this one out.
But right
$24.
Now, stuffed it's in. Got I have different... a Tom
can you hear
Bin,
us still?
I don't think
just...
you can.
Backpack that I got.
Yeah,
I don't
think just like here. Whatever.
Stuff for Gear Diary.
He just muted us and he's just going off.
I've been using that and it works well for that.
Oh my God, he did. But muted us and he's just
some of the
talking and talking and talking.
Put the plate
at first
up higher
I just
on
didn't
your back.
Right? No, he muted us.
I think it's both of those things.
He muted all of us.
I don't care. I'm going to mute him.
I didn't know you could do that.
Oh, that's messed up.
How do you do that?
He had to do it like one at a time and mute us all. Joel, are you there? Joel?
Hello? How do you do that?
I don't know. I don't know. Is he still there? He's still there.
He's not talking.
Okay, well, anyways, this bag here that I just posted, it's a 2 water bottle holder, lumbar pack, fanny pack, hiking, fishing, waist bag, and it's roughly, I would say it's not as tall as the one that Joel posted, but it does look to be high quality, it does look to have a high volume, and it's got different ways that you can wear it, including like waist bag style. It's got a suspender style, just whatever to make you comfortable. And it's $25 as opposed to $88 or $150.
All right. So I have a fanny pack that I put my phone in when I'm running or biking. So I, you know, when I look at this, I ask the question, at what point does a fanny pack become a backpack?
Yeah, this one, no, looking at the pictures of people wearing this, this is the same size as that one Joel posted. And right. It is freaking huge.
My question is,
I wouldn't wear it.
My question is, if you're wearing a backpack, why do you need a fanny pack? In addition
Because some things you want to carry around, you know, a little bit more modularly, and you don't always want to walk around with a backpack.
If I was backpacking, I mean, I'm talking about not a day trip. I'm talking about overnight camping. I can see, yeah, convenience. You may want to have a secondary pack someplace that's easier to get to. That way you're not taking it off. But if I'm just day hiking, if I'm going, you know, hiking for the day, I'm going as minimal as possible.
I don't have like a cubicle at work, so I have to carry everything in with me. So, you know, I end up carrying, because I don't like having a lot of stuff just in my pocket. So I do end up carrying a fanny pack for my phone, my wallet, I do have to carry an EpiPen for now, and things like that, and my vaporizer. And then I have my work backpack, which has my laptop in it and the docking station for it and the power supply and all that jazz. And then I also, I eat like, you know, 12 times a day or some crazy thing like that because I'm always hungry. So I'm almost always eating. But, so I carry a giant lunch bag with me. So yeah, I carry a lot when I walk into the
house. You need a purse, man. You need a purse to put all that shit in, right?
I have a backpack, I have a fanny pack, and I have a lunch bag. I am carrying more than enough.
Yeah, and I put a link in the Bumble chat of what I had inside my backpack when I was working. And I still have this, and I take it on trips. But
this better not be a...
No,
it's a suppository bag.
No, it's a Max.
It's a colostomy bag.
It's a pocket.
Anything is a suppository bag if you work hard enough.
Yeah. You can fill this with suppositories.
No, I do. I've had these as well. Yeah. And these go on like a belt or some.
Yeah,
well, no, I've had smaller ones that were called like medical bags.
Yeah.
That I've used for stuff.
This is 8x6, and I wouldn't want to carry anything bigger than this in addition to a backpack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can hear us now.
Can you hear us
stupid
now?
Mumble.
We were talking
I can.
You.
Yeah, I can.
We thought you muted
headset.
All of us.
No, I didn't.
You should check out that last one I posted that's $25 and is basically the same size as that $100-something one you posted.
Yeah, if I post it again, I can't see it.
And has two slots for water bottles.
Okay.
You know what, we gotta wrap this up. I gotta get to bed.
Oh, we do, man. It's 10:20, Mel.
Yeah,
man.
David,
Dave's
gonna
the pumpkin.
Die.
I'll be on.
You send him that link. I'll play us out, Dave. You get that suppository ready.
I am short.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, I'm short.
Oh my god.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
While you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
Wait, Joel, did you say you got a dog?
No.
Oh, I thought you said you got a... Like, I thought you said you got a dog, and it just hit me that we just glossed over that. Because some other people started talking. I thought you said you got a dog. I'm sorry.
No.
We got another dang cat.
Good, man. Bravo.
My cat likes to run out the door.
We've got a Maine Coon cat that we paid way too much for. That's an indoor cat. It weighs 25 pounds. It's got to be groomed. It's got a double coat. And we've got another cat that was a stray, a rescue cat that lives indoors and has anxiety. And we've got another cat that spends 80% of his time outdoors, 20% inside. He's just an old cat. And then we've got another cat outside full-time that we've had for years. She just lives outside. And we've got a stray that's taken up that shows up at 3 o'clock every day to eat. But me and my daughter were walking to my mother-in-law's house this weekend, and we saw a kitten in the woods that had gotten separated from the rest of the litter. And, of course, my daughter's not going anywhere without that kitten, so... We have a kitten now.
Bravo! So
how many cats that is, it's
nice.
Too many.
All right, I'll give you one thing, Joe. At least that one comes in one of my favorite colors, purple.
There you go. And it's the right size, and it looks to be fairly quality.
Looks to be, yeah.
But he's still getting that other one.
Yeah, he's still paying $150.
But nah. You know, it's $140, but for $10 more, he can get the La Grande Derriere.
It may be worse, because I'm looking at possibly getting a Go Rucker 4 that'll fit my ruck plate in.
He'll get both of them.
How's your town doing?
Good. What you eating, Dan?
Well, I was eating some vegetable chips.
Sound like a goat.
No, they're really crunchy. Yeah. I mute myself when I'm chewing them. Damn. Like, it's so loud. I can't hear you when I'm chewing. Oh. What the heck?
Oh, is it bad that I'm already ready for bed?
Oh, I have to.
Oh, I hear you, man. Dave, I don't think we spoke since I came back from South Carolina.
No, I don't think we have.
You know what? I tell you what. You know what you really got to work on down there in South Carolina?
The roads.
Yeah, getting them damn roads fixed. Oh, my goodness.
Every pothole I hit, I thank Nikki Haley. she was governor, and she literally spent no money on roads the entire time she was governor. She was one of the worst. Politically, I align myself with her, but as a governor, she was awful. She was all about cronyism. The woman she put over, DHEC, who is the agency my wife works for, was just a clown. She actually showed up at a hospital in Charleston, South Carolina. This is the head of DHEC, state agency, Department of Health, Environmental Control, showed up at a hospital unannounced, pretending to have Ebola, just to see if they were ready. That's just clown stuff. It makes no sense for somebody to do that. But Nikki Haley was just an awful governor. She spent no money on roads. The chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, his name is Hugh Leatherman. He's a lower state guy. He spent all the money in his county. It was ridiculous. But our roads.
And she's still better than Trump.
I don't know. There's not many people worse than Nikki Haley. we've got awful roads, and they've been awful ever since she was gone. You can't let something like roads go 4 years because they just deteriorate.
No, Dave. Have you been to Newberry?
Mm-hmm.
Which is where my mother-in-law moved. Okay, and you've been to Chester? Have you been to Chester?
No, my wife has. My wife drove back from, she worked in Columbia today, so she drove through Newberry to get home.
All right, so Chester, where my mother-in-law lived and moved to Newberry, is about 45 minutes to an hour apart.
Yeah.
And almost, you know, maybe a little more than halfway, there's this bridge over, I don't remember what the river is called, right? And it's almost like the demarcation line between the two counties. Because on the one hand, it's like you might as well just be driving over gravel roads and everything. You cross that bridge and all of a sudden it's like you are on newly paved highways or whatever. It's such a contrast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and
it's crazy.
It was worse. I mean, Nikki Haley's not been governor in a while. But it was worse right after she, you know, went on to become ambassador to the UN or whatever. You know, they're slowly doing work. But, you know, there's a lot of my county will get attention for your county will here.
Yeah, I can see that, but anyway. Man.
And there's 48 counties in the, you know, there's large disparity economically between 90% of them and the other 10%.
Well, Chester's on the up.
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean anything when it comes to, you know, where the money's being spent. I mean, it's where the politician lives.
Chester's on the way up, though, man. They got all those Chinese companies opening up. Down to the textile companies and the fiber companies. So they're putting a lot of money into there.
Newberry's got a little college, and that's about it.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. But you know what? That college must be doing something right because all the roads around Newberry are good. Right, Dave? They put you to shame. What's Clemson doing for you?
I don't know. I'm retired. I stay at home all the time.
Wait, isn't University of Clemson?
Yeah, it's 9 miles from my house.
Yeah, how come they're not fixing the roads for you?
Oh,
why
don't
Newberry do it, but not Clemson?
It ain't the colleges is doing it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know I don't remember how the roads are in Clemson. They might be beautiful.
Oh, they're high traffic roads, so they get attention. You know, every Saturday during football season, there's probably some of the better roads.
I'll tell you what, one of the things that's killing the Chester roads is all the logging that's going on out there. Them logging trucks are just heavy as shit and just tearing apart them roads.
There's a lot of woods down there. Like McCormick County, which is near Chester and Newberry, probably in between them maybe, or this side of Newberry. It's 98% woods.
You know what episode this is?
1072.
Wrong! That was last week.
I wasn't here last week. Yeah. You were waiting for that.
You usually get it right. Huh? You're slipping, Dave. Must be the old age. Snorting coke over there?
Nah.
You got allergies?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's terrible, isn't it?
I don't know why. I mean, it's after we've had a frost that usually kills stuff, but...
You've had a frost already?
Yeah.
Wow.
A couple.
We haven't had a frost yet here. Which isn't surprising. It's very very mild here.
Well, it's plumb warm today.
What am I doing? I'm setting this up here. It's been mild down there, Joe?
It's actually starting to get warm again. It got cool for a while. I was able to shut off the air conditioning and everything. I mean, it was staying in the mid-70s. Now it's like 90 again.
Yeah, it got a little chilly. No frosting. It didn't frost us, Dave. We remained frostless. Now it's hot again.
I think the coldest it got down to at night was like 40 or something. I want it to freeze, damn it.
Seems like ice skating.
Kill off all the bugs.
So what do you think Joel's going to have for dinner tonight?
Meatloaf.
Really?
No, I have no idea. I'm going to say meatloaf anyway. Wednesday, so last time he put something on in the morning. So crock pot stew.
Dave?
Ah.
Is that a Southern cuisine?
I'm going to say pizza. I don't know.
Pizza? I don't think he's had pizza in a while, has he?
I don't think so.
We'll see. That's what I'm sticking with.
I don't know, man. Pizza. Yeah, I don't know. Here's the problem. He had last week off, which means he was at the fair and ate a lot of food at the fair.
Yeah, he said he wasn't going to have a dill dog, but he had a dill dog.
He had it, yeah, inserted somewhere, right? So
just because he didn't eat it doesn't mean he didn't have it.
I'm wondering if he might be having a salad tonight to compensate.
Tossed salad.
Yeah, he's got a tossed chef salad to compensate for.
Not a Caesar salad.
A chef's tossed salad. He's going to toss the salad of a chef.
There's a lot of work to make a Cobb salad if you do it right. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to do that, I don't know if you call it right, but do the fancy, like, it's like a pie or whatever.
Into a Cobb salad anyway.
Got egg in it.
Well, you have chicken. It's chicken, olives, bacon, blue cheese.
I'll just have a BLT.
It's COBB, so chicken. I think it's for olive, blue cheese, bacon, and blue cheese, and then tomatoes, onions, lettuce.
Doesn't sound very healthy, does it?
All right, so it's should be made with tomato, bacon, chicken breast, hard-boiled eggs, avocado, chives, blue cheese. I thought Cobb actually stood for. Chicken olives, bacon. Oh, blue.
I didn't know it stood for anything.
Blue cheese. Well, it looks like it doesn't, and I was wrong, Dave, so, you know. It's just named after the guy who's the restaurant owner where it was invented at the Hollywood Brown Derby restaurant. The restaurant's owner was Robert Howard Cobb. There you go.
I think Brown Derby restaurant was featured in an episode of I Love Lucy.
Well, there you go. That's how
the reason I even remember it.
1937. But yeah, it's typically layered over in strips on the salad instead of just mixed in right away. There you go. Now you can head out to your local Greek diner and they'll probably have a Cobb salad on the menu, maybe, along with the requisite Greek salad and the chef salad and the dinner salad. Side salad, some might call it.
And don't forget the wedge salad.
If you're in Pennsylvania, you'll probably also see a taco salad on there too. They'll have that. You know, that made its rounds after that got a little big back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, I remember those.
And if you're especially lucky, your diner will have a salad bar so you can make your own salad.
You sound like a travel blogger.
Salad bars are becoming harder and harder to find these days.
Are you reading this? Or are you just spewing it?
No, I'm spewing it. All right, so I think Ruby Tuesday still has a salad bar, but I haven't been there in years. And the only there's actually a pizza place, an Italian restaurant over here that has a salad bar, unless you go into a buffet, like a Chinese buffet or something. Well, all buffets usually have a little bit of a salad bar, right?
Yeah.
But the Stargate Diner, almost halfway between my house and either Lehigh Valley or Brigantine, Atlantic City, New Jersey, has a wonderful salad bar, Dave. Mwah. It's the place to go when we're heading up.
I think you like salads.
I do. I love salads.
I like a salad.
You know what weirds my mother-in-law out? What weirds my mother-in-law out is that she typically, when she makes a salad, and she makes a salad a lot, she just, you know, mixes the dressing and everything in right there and then serves it at the table. And I would, any leftover salad, I would take home with me for the next day. And she's like, you can't do that. It's going to get all wilted and it's not going to be crisp and everything. And I'm like, don't worry about it. I got it. It works for me and I will eat it because I love your salad. So.
Don't worry about it. You just sound like you were from South Jersey or something.
Yeah, don't worry about it. I got it going on. So I'm and sometimes I like it when the croutons are a little soggier the next day. But yeah, I make salad with every dinner. I love salad. Mm. You eat your dinner, you make the salad as dessert, and it just helps push everything right on out that next morning, Dave. Slides right out of there.
Now, I couldn't eat salad for a year after I had my gallbladder taken out.
Really?
I could, but it would be distress afterwards. Yeah.
Was that your excuse? I don't want salad anymore.
No, I like salad. My wife eats salad every day for lunch, and we have salad at least four times a week for supper with the meal.
Well, you can eat salad now without pain?
Oh, yeah.
So what? I thought gallbladder, like fried foods would be the big thing that.
I don't know. I think everybody's a little different. I mean, it's fat.
Or raw meat would be an issue.
Or maybe seeds.
But I've gotten used to it. You know, there's nothing really I can't eat anymore. But for about a year after I had my gallbladder, it was some foods I wouldn't want to eat because of the aftermath.
Were you able to eat nuts?
Yeah. Yeah, my sister couldn't. Yeah.
You get a lot of nuts in that mouth of yours.
I knew that was coming.
He ate all the nuts.
Can you eat the nut butter didn't hurt your gallbladder or lack of gallbladder? Oh my God.
You're a child, and what's sadder is when I'm with you, I am too.
It makes things fun, though.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. I'm talking about peanut butter or sunflower butter or
almond butter.
I love nut butter.
You know, have you, did you ever, I guess, is it Biscoff?
Yeah.
You ever had that? The cookie butter?
Well, no, I've had the cookies.
They actually make a butter out of Biscoff.
I've not had that.
I haven't had it either. I've seen it, but I didn't see it until after, you know, I started watching what I eat.
I've tried it. It would be something like Nutella. It's close to like something like Nutella where you could just eat it with a spoon.
I'm not a big Nutella fan.
What?
It's something I don't trust about it.
I've had Nutella, and yeah, it's good.
What don't you trust about Nutella?
I don't know. I'm a peanut butter man. I eat peanut butter every day, multiple times a day sometimes. And I love peanut butter. But Nutella is hazelnut and something else. Like, is it chocolate?
Cocoa.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Cocoa. Anyway, people, and when I say people, I'm talking about young white women, my daughters. They'll dip, you know, things in Nutella. And,
yeah, you can buy it that way from the store. Get those little mini breadsticks.
Yeah, and I don't dip anything in peanut butter. I dip a knife in peanut butter, and I spread it on bread. And I don't go make multiple trips in a jar of peanut butter with something. No, they're not.
You don't dip your celery into peanut butter?
No, I mean if I do, I spoon it out and put it on a plate.
You are missing out on an experience there.
I don't eat out of the jar.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about? Okay, so
they're not double dipping. It's just
you put peanut butter on things. Your family puts those things in the Nutella jar. That's what you're complaining about.
Yeah, yeah.
In the jar. But no, you get like a what do they call it? Pemmican. You fill it with peanut butter and you dip your celery in it.
Yeah,
or you just spread the peanut butter on your celery.
Either way, I would do that. I mean, I got
and put some raisins on it.
I like celery with blue cheese. I like celery with peanut butter. I eat celery that way. Not all three together, but
why not? Have you tried it? No. I mean, you like peanut butter. You like blue cheese.
Yeah, yeah. I've had blue cheese on a hamburger, but I'm not gonna have it on peanut butter. I don't think. But peanut butter and bacon is that's awesome. If you've never had it.
I don't think I'm ever going to.
Oh no, you should. You should.
I don't think I will.
Oh, the peanut butter brings the salt. I guess it's the fat and the peanut butter brings the saltiness of the bacon out. It just tastes. It's awesome.
You and the think sweetness of the peanut butter too.
I don't know about that. I mean, I don't think of it as sweet meat.
Well, no, I mean peanut butter has a sweetness.
Only peanut butter. You only really notice it though if there's been sugar added, or some kind of sweetener added to your peanut butter. I mean, your peanut butter should be that slightly bit more salty than anything else.
Yeah. But I mean, as a nut, peanuts kind of I think are more sweet to me than like say.
They're actually not nuts. You know that, though, right?
A legume. Well, they're sweeter than a bean in some cases, like a kidney bean. I find them. Like, and I'm not saying like they're sugar, but I'm just saying that muted level of sweetness that comes through, I also think would accentuate the saltiness of the bacon.
Look it up if you don't believe me, and I could be wrong. I've been wrong many times before, but. A peanut butter bacon spread was actually a very popular item.
Yeah,
pre-World War II.
Hasn't Joel been eating that too? I mean, doesn't he like
it's
that?
It's good. It's good.
But that's like 8 pounds of grease, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't eat a lot of bacon. I don't eat a lot of bacon, and
we were talking about the taste, Joe, not the health and healthiness of the food. Obviously, I mean, Nutella is not.
That's definitely not healthy. I mean, there's ways to make it slightly healthier in the same way that you can make peanut butter healthier. But,
Speaking of that, I got to make, I actually have to make my wife Nutella. I told her I would make her some a couple months ago, and I still haven't done it.
Powdered hazelnut is a lot harder to come by than powdered peanuts is.
For what?
For making healthier, like hazelnut butter.
Oh, I actually have raw hazelnuts, unroasted hazelnuts. So
okay, nuts have a lot of oil in them naturally.
Right.
But a powdered version of it has all that oil removed, and then you can add it back in to a quantity that, you know, is better for your heart. Or your overall health, anyway.
And then add all that sugar and cocoa in there, too, right?
Well, I wouldn't add the sugar, but definitely you could do the cocoa.
All right, let's get this show going.
There's a show?
Yeah. Joel. Oh, Joel is here.
Ah.
I thought we were turning this into a cooking show. I mean, I'm down with that if you guys want to.
Not yet. Is Joel there or no?
I guess we could turn it into the CPAC show.
Oh, just as a, you know what, and I'm surprised it hasn't happened, but it's possible my internet may go down. They had the contractors finally ran the conduit and the line to replace the broken one from the beginning of the summer, and I don't, the weirdest thing, like, they came and my internet was out. I didn't even know they were here. And my internet was out, and then I got it back up and running. And well, I thought I had to got back up and running. I had to, like, reboot the router and the modem. Had to turn it off a couple of times. But it turned out that they were just working. And they cut my internet off. I don't know why they had to do that. And then they ran the conduit and the cable, and when they were just about finished, the internet went off again, and then they had me come out and look at the work that they did and said, you know, show me that they actually ran it. I'm like, that's great. And they're like, and then an engineer will come by to hook it up. And I'm like, what? Why can't you just hook it up now?
You got that business class stuff, though.
I do, but see, here's,
that's why.
but the thing is, the internet. So I don't know. All the business classes is just a switch on whatever the fuck they have out there, because the actual cable runs into my neighbor's side, gets split off in the basement, and runs to me, also. So, and that's not the way it's supposed to be, but there are the restrictions around here. So it took like 6 months for them just to fix that broken cable due to all the rigmarole they have to go through and everything. Anyway, since then, my neighbor has been reporting that his internet, which is the same as mine, interestingly enough, is the same cable, has been going up and down, up and down, up and down. And he's been on support with them for, last I heard was over an hour ago. He had been on for a couple hours trying to get them to come out to fix or whatever the hell it is that they need to do. Oddly enough, I noticed one other time that it was down, and since then I haven't noticed a problem, and this is going on an hour and a half, 2 hours now. So it is possible that it could go down, just to be aware. So this is 1073, right, Dave?
Yes.
Yeah, let's do it, and maybe Joel will be there.